The Green Valley News for Wednesday, April 15th. Your taxes are due. Mark DeGroft with you here at Sun Sounds of Arizona. You got to hand it to Republican Congressman Mike Lawler of New York. He's willing to face his constituents, even those who disagree with him. Lawler spoke at a town hall on Sunday that got loud, bordering on chaotic, mostly over the U.S. role in the Iran war. He attended an equally robust town hall in February, shortly after the deaths of two people during the ICE protests in Minnesota. Much of Sunday's crowd wasn't buying Lawler's reasoning, but all sides had an awesome staring, and he listened to everybody. And then there's Representative Juan Ciscomani, who, like Lawler, is a highly competitive district, faces a real possibility of being ousted in November. But Juan's taking a different approach. He's listening to GOP leadership, who are telling members to avoid engaging with people who might ask tough questions. Ciscomani spent his two-week spring recess from Congress handing out awards, talking to hand-picked groups and snuggling with friendly media, the kind who consider, what do you like on your snoring hot dog, to be hard-hitting journalism. Juan loves those questions because it allows him to avoid the fact that America is on fire, an American he helped create through blind allegiance to a president who is unraveling right before our eyes. Ciscomani is fond of touting what he calls the advantages of the Big Beautiful Bill, ignoring that it raised the debt ceiling $5 trillion and imposed harmful cuts to Medicaid and vital social programs. But he avoids talking about, well, just about everything else, such as grocery prices, which are up nearly 3% in the last year, with some staples far, far higher. Beef prices are at an all-time high, up 16% over just a year ago. Industry forecasts say it's only going to get worse. Gas prices, driven by the war in Iran, are up 30% since we first set the Middle East on fire on February 28th. That is an extra $600 to $700 per vehicle every year. By comparison, that extra tax cash refund Ciscomani crows about is just about half of that. And then there's the tariffs. Donald Trump's favorite hammer have increased prices for American consumers, delivered huge financial hits to U.S. businesses, led to huge job losses, and have not significantly reduced the trade deficit. And don't forget that the February Supreme Court ruling that determined tariffs imposed under the International Emergency Economic Powers Act were illegal. That leaves the government owing $166 billion in refunds. Ciscomani brags about a recent Arizona visit by Interior Secretary Doug Burgum, but speaks not a word about the deep staffing cuts to National Parks and Forest Service employees that have left the department and our national parks in tatters. Then there is the plummeting stock market and raising interest rates, deportations of U.S. citizens, Trump using the office to enrich himself and his family, using the DOJ to go after enemies, and the dismantling of the Department of Education. Got a child with a disability? Good luck. Then there's Trump picking fights with the Pope and presenting himself on social media as Jesus. Lord help us. If your media source isn't reporting any of this, you may want to change the channel. Ciscomani doesn't want to upset Donald Trump or the GOP leadership in Congress. His buddy House Speaker Mike Johnson and other GOP colleagues have funneled nearly $1 million to his re-election campaign, about a quarter of his total that's been raised. By comparison, small donors, you know, the people who live in the district and actually vote, contributed just 7%. Let's be clear, they are more important to him than to you. But soon, as a growing number of his colleagues have, Juan Ciscomani is going to realize that nearly everything Donald Trump touches eventually dies. And that includes careers in Congress. And that is written by the editor, Dan Shearer. Lenny Friedman is looking forward to celebrating World Labyrinth Day on May 2nd with a new one that he built through a Tohono O'odham Nation collaboration, continuing his longtime love of constructing the mazes. Friedman's labyrinth at Suarita's Man in the Maze Trails Park is the first for the town of Suarita's Parks. He has built 12 labyrinths over the years, starting in Southern Oregon, where he was a middle school math teacher before retiring to Green Valley. He said it was his students who inspired him to build the labyrinths. I took them to a labyrinth, allowed them to walk it, and they journaled after walking it and shared their experience, Friedman said. And what came out of that motivated me to build one at my home in Rogue River, Oregon, and go on, and I've been building them ever since. Friedman's labyrinths can be found from Suarita to Green Valley and from Elephant Head to Dubuque. World Labyrinth Day, an international event founded by the Labyrinth Society in 2009, is described as a moving meditation for world peace and the celebration of the labyrinth experience. A labyrinth is a winding pathway that can be found in nearly every part of the world, dating back thousands of years. Its twists and turns can be interpreted as life events that take place on personal choices. The man in the maze is a spiritual symbol of the Tohono O'odham Nation. The figure at the entrance to the labyrinth and in the center is called Litoi in the Tohono O'odham language. He is often referred to as the Elder Brother. The park's proper name is Iltoi Torrials Park, which the town council approved 4-2 in April of 2023. Vice Mayor Kara Egbert and council member Diane Priolo opposed the name for the park on Villa Villita just south of Suarita Road. I completed my part about a year and a half ago, Friedman said of his work being building the maze by rock, and the Tohono O'odham artists did their pieces, and Saguaro Parks and Recreation will do the plannings. Friedman suggests people enter the labyrinth with a purpose or a goal or even a question. Follow the path to the center and then reverse your steps to return to the entrance. Friedman says that unlike a maze, there is no decision to make after entering and walking between rocks. It's very significant for young people, for old people, Friedman said. They use it for praying, healing, and grieving the loss of their relatives. So what is it? It's World Labyrinth Day. The town of Suarita, Tohono O'odham Nation, and the labyrinth designers plan to celebrate it on May 2nd at 8 o'clock a.m. at the Man in the Maze Trails Park, and that's located at 16300 South La Villita Road. The park includes a half acre with plants culturally significant to the Tohono O'odham Nation. And another labyrinth event is planned in Green Valley with Lenny Friedman and the Green Valley Garden Club members at a labyrinth they built. And that's on May 2nd at 1 o'clock p.m. at Desert Meadows Park, 999 South La Huerta. The labyrinth is at the park's edge on land provided by an adjacent assisting living center. Garden Club members have added painted rocks with messages of peace all along the path. Mexican authorities closed down a suspected drug tunnel on April 8th in Nogales, Sonora, that led in the direction of the U.S. border. The entrance to the 260-foot-long, 15-foot-deep tunnel was found on a property at Calle Internacional and Calle Ingenieros, steps from the border. According to independent journalist Cesar Barron, who was at the scene, members of the Drug Enforcement Administration, or the DEA, safeguarded the area on the U.S. side, while agents from Secretaría de Marina and Policía Estatal de Seguridad Pública Unidad Fronteriza did so on the Mexican side. The Santa Cruz County Sheriff's Department told the Nogales International that it was not involved in the operation. In a press release shared by Mexican authorities on April 9th, the tunnel was described as rustic, headed in the direction of the United States and with no exit point. The premises were sealed and placed under police custody. The Gabinete de Seguridad de México shared photos of the operation on its X account. A man was arrested in connection with the tunnel who is linked to surveillance, smuggling, and human trafficking activities for a criminal group. He had 21 rounds in his possession, which were confiscated by Mexican authorities, and his name has not been released. A DEA representative told the Nogales International no information would yet be shared because of the ongoing investigation. Authorities on both sides of the border haven't confirmed whether the tunnel crossed into the U.S. However, the DEA agents did search a home on the United States side. As reported by Telemundo and independent journalist Hiram Machi, a woman and her four young children were cleared out of their home in Nogales, Arizona, by DEA agents at around 6 o'clock in the morning on April 8th. Gracia Olmo said she rents the border-adjacent house and lives there with her husband and children. Olmo told Telemundo that the DEA identified this as a drug operation, and she assured them that her family is not involved in any way. Olmos allowed Telemundo and Machi to enter her home. When authorities finished their search, revealing large holes the DEA agents made in the floors, presumably searching for the tunnel. The home was left in disarray and their car was ransacked by agents. The man arrested in Mexico in connection with the clandestine tunnel was placed at the disposal of the corresponding public prosecutor, who will continue with the investigation, according to Mexican authorities. It's 20 to 10. A Green Valley resident was taken to a local hospital on Saturday morning after becoming the first rattlesnake bite victim of 2026. Santa Rita Fire District Battalion Chief Joseph O'Brien said that the victim was gardening when she was bitten around 10:30 a.m. O'Brien declined to provide the age or sex of the victim or the location of where the incident took place, citing HIPAA. HIPAA, the Health Insurance Portability and Accountability Act, restricts the sharing of medical and identifying information without the patient's approval. The snake was captured and transferred to the U of A's research team for study. For 6 years, the Arizona Poison and Drug Information Center at the U of A has been collecting venom profiles so that they can receive the best anti-venom possible. Last month, SRFD spokeswoman Amy Schultz said that 7 residents were taken to hospitals last year after being bit by the rattlesnakes. 2 others were bitten by snakes and managed to avoid being seen, and a 3rd was bitten by a non-venomous snake. The fire district responded to more than 3,200 snake removal calls last year, and are already seeing the calls ratcheting up. In February, SRFD handled 61 snake removal calls, and during the first half of March, they've removed 123, Schultz said. So listen up, here's some safety tips. Stay alert when you're walking in areas with tall grass or rocks or brush. Always look before placing your hands or feet in areas that you can't see. Keep your yards clear of debris and overgrown vegetation that attracts snakes. And if you encounter a rattlesnake, keep a safe distance. Don't attempt to handle or capture it. And in the event of a bite, call 911 immediately and seek medical attention. Don't try to cut, suck, or apply a tourniquet, that is, to the wound. Well, the FIFA still plans to have Iran's World Cup soccer team train at the Keno Sports Complex after Iran's request to move games out of the United States was denied, this according to Pima County officials. Iran's Football Federation requested matches be moved to Mexico, but Mexican President Claudia Sheinbaum said on Friday that FIFA denied the request, citing logistical challenges. The request came after the U.S. and Israel launched airstrikes on February 28th, killing Iran's supreme leader, Ali Khamenei, and plunging the region into war. Efforts to settle the conflict failed over the weekend during meetings in Pakistan. Pima County announced in February, 8 days before the attacks, that FIFA had selected Keno Sports Complex in Tucson to host Iran. The team will train in Tucson and travel to matches in other cities, with its first game scheduled for June 15th against New Zealand in Los Angeles. The county will receive $213,952 for leasing the space to Iran, according to the county's contract with FIFA. Keno Sports Complex Director Sarah Hanna told the Green Valley News on Monday that the county received confirmation April 10th that FIFA has already paid 50% of the lease. The lease covers June 6th through 27th, with FIFA agreeing to pay $9,725 per day beyond that. Hanna said Iran and FIFA never canceled plans to come to Tucson, and that Iran, which has communicated through FIFA representatives, put in a request on Monday to have logistical questions answered. Iran is 100% coming unless something stops in the future, but they will be here as of now, Hanna said. She said the county is confident FIFA will still use the space if Iran doesn't play in the World Cup, likely having a team substituting for Iran train in Tucson. And that came as good news after visa complications led to a Mexican baseball team from Navojoa not playing a single game at the stadium last season. Team owner Victor Cuevas Jr. eventually pulled out of Tucson altogether. Considering what happened with the Tucson baseball team, we're very excited to still be moving forward as a training facility, Hanna said of the World Cup contract. Public won't have access to Iran's training camp. Its matches will be in Los Angeles with the final game in Seattle on June 26th. The county reported the team could spend more training time in Tucson if it advanced to the next round. Hanna said the county has logistical challenges that it's working through as it balances around the rival with FC Tucson soccer season that kicks off on the 26th. FC Tucson is our partner in this, she said, adding that they helped bring FIFA here. And FC Tucson is being displaced as FIFA is using their main facilities. But we have alternative facilities that we're working with FC Tucson on. The county is also in contract with the Pima County Sheriff's Department, the Tucson Police Department, Oro Valley Police Department, the Arizona Department of Public Safety, and federal agencies to develop a security plan that's focused on general safety and keeping curious observers and fans at bay. Hanna's looking forward to having World Cup involvement at Keno and in Pima County. FIFA has been great at communication with us, and our partnership with FC Tucson and their willingness to work with us has been really pivotal. She said that adding Visit Tucson also played a role. They have signed a host city agreement as part of this, and they're also a great partner making all of this world stuff happen. So, we're excited. From Sierra Vista, as National Democrats elevate Arizona's 6th Congressional District to a top-tier battleground, Democratic candidate Joanna Mendoza is leaning into a message centered on rural health care. Mendoza, a retired Marine Corps drill instructor, was recently added to the Democratic Congressional Campaign Committee's Red to Blue program, signaling party views the race against Republican incumbent Juan Siscomani as one of its top pickup opportunities. The designation comes alongside early fundraising momentum. Mendoza reported raising about $2.3 million in the first quarter, compared to roughly $1.5 million for Siscomani. National is paying attention, but it hasn't changed me or the campaign, Mendoza said on Cochise County's Sunday roundtable. Our focus still is on Arizona and Southern Arizona families, especially in the rural communities. The roundtable is a production of the Sierra Vista Herald, a sister paper of the Green Valley News, Swarita Sun. Siscomani has a standing invitation to appear on the show. Healthcare remains central to Mendoza's campaign, particularly in Cochise County and other rural parts of the district, where access is limited and the costs are rising. Democrats have warned of dire consequences to healthcare for rural citizens and the poor when changes to Medicaid take effect in 2027. But the Republicans, including Siscomani, have pointed to provisions in H.R. 1, the so-called One Big Beautiful Bill signed into law in 2025, as evidence that Congress has already committed significant resources to rural health. The law created a $50 billion rural health fund, distributed over 5 years, aimed at helping hospitals and providers absorb the impact of broader Medicaid changes. That funding, roughly $10 billion per year, has been framed by supporters as a cushion for rural systems that may be facing financial strain. And asked whether that allocation could offset potential Medicaid shortfalls, Mendoza dismissed the idea that the funding is sufficient. If that were the case, then people wouldn't be really concerned about health care right now. The two don't match up, she said. Mendoza instead argued that the broader package, which includes long-term Medicaid reductions, will still leave rural communities vulnerable, particularly where hospitals already operate on thin margins. Another major component of H.R. 1 is a new requirement that many Medicaid recipients work, volunteer, attend school, or participate in job training for at least 80 hours per month to maintain the coverage. The provision applies primarily to low-income adults covered under Medicaid expansion and is expected to take effect in 2027. Supporters say the requirement is designed to reduce fraud and ensure able-bodied adults are engaged in the workforce. Critics argue that it risks pushing eligible people off coverage due to the administrative hurdles. When asked whether such requirements are reasonable safeguards, Mendoza pointed to her own family experience. My parents worked really hard and still couldn't make ends meet, she said. There are a lot of folks on these programs who already work. And she added that similar policies in other states have not increased employment but have led to coverage losses. What we've seen is people losing health care, not gaining opportunity, she said. Mendoza said she's asked Iscamani to participate in a debate and plans to continue regular visits to Cochise County, aiming to meet with constituents at least monthly. I'm not a show horse, I'm a workhorse, she said. I'm going to fight for the people of this district. With National Democrats now investing more heavily in the race, Mendoza said the campaign's momentum is building, but insisted that the focus remains local. Our district is ready, she said. Mission first. Arizona, always. And let's take a look at Meandering the Mesquite, warrior, statesman, and visionary, the Eisenhower years. This is written by Scott Dyke. Seldom does a person dominate the American landscape for decades. Dwight David Eisenhower was the exception. He served as a supreme Allied commander for the final decisive years that ended World War II. His public service expanded when he served two terms as president. Rarely remembered, both the Republican and Democratic parties courted Ike for their nominations in 1952. Eisenhower was born in Texas in 1890. However, he is routinely referred to as a Kansan, as his parents moved to Abilene when he is only two. He was chosen as a member of the class of 1915 at the United States Military Academy at West Point, and although only an average student, he found a niche with sports. He was the starting fullback, or halfback, that is, for Army football. Years later, he reminisced, "My biggest disappointment was not making the Army baseball team." The class of 1915 produced 59 general officers, including 2 5-stars, Eisenhower and Omar Bradley, out of an enrollment of 164. 5-star generals are a select group: Eisenhower, Bradley, George Marshall, Douglas MacArthur, and Henry Hap Arnold. 2 generals were considered 6-stars, John Pershing of World War I notoriety, and a guy named Washington. Ike's election to the presidency was a no-brainer due to his name recognition by a war-weary nation desiring some normalcy. Ike's demeanor was that of a wizened and kindly grandfather, but beneath the calm exterior, a controlled temper existed, as many colonels could testify to. Ike had a barrel of snakes to contend with. He had to lead the country into a transition from wartime to peacetime. That would prove testy, as he inherited a mess in Europe, which was exacerbated by the removal of Churchill and of Roosevelt's death. America was weary and worn out by the massive conflict. These conditions were a petri dish for communism. The Cold War became the new threat. Eisenhower would navigate the treacherous waters of nuclear weaponry and the Korean police action. At home, Ike presided over a sanguine post-war economy. He devised an undertaking that would modernize the country's transportation system. The Interstate Highway Bill passed in 1956. Eisenhower's vision of improving commerce was no doubt inspired by military equipment travel plans that were devised in WW2. It consisted of 41,000 miles of interstate and changed America forever. After 8 years and a heart attack which mesmerized the nation, Ike bowed out of the public scenario. Before he left, his farewell address delivered one of the most insightful observations the American public ever heard. He warned of the military-industrial complex becoming an eternal threat. Coming from a general with a lifetime career in the military was particularly an earth-moving wake-up call. In October of 1964, Ike turned 74 years old. A photo op was planned. The Sigma Chi fraternity house was contacted. Barry Goldwater was running for the presidency. He was a Sig, so an aide reached out looking for drivers of an arriving contingency flying from D.C. to Gettysburg, Pennsylvania. 4 seniors jumped at the opportunity. 3 lucked out, transporting people from the tiny airport right to Ike's office, a softball lob from the house. 2 cars carried Senator Goldwater's son and Secret Service agents. Another had Congressman Bill Miller's running VP on the ticket, her daughter, and she was 10 years old. I got 3 reporters from the press corps and the birthday cake, and we all got on a major network news show and received handshakes from the former president. And thereafter, whenever we glimpsed him, We would shout out in irreverent, "Hey, Ike!" He didn't seem to mind and would flash that famous grin of his. Dwight Eisenhower died in 1969, 9 years after leaving the White House. The country owed Ike a lot. The feeling for the man and his service to the nation was best signified by his iconic campaign slogan, "I like Ike." And in the education roundup, the Suarita Unified School District Governing Board unanimously agreed last Wednesday to give a 5% raise to all certified and salaried employees. In addition, all support staff team members will receive a minimum 5% raise, although people working in some specific categories could receive higher raises. The board also agreed to increase its contribution to the employees' medical insurance coverage by $225. The compensation increase amounts to about $2 million. 8 positions were trimmed from the budget, but the staff members were reassigned to fill other needed vacancies, Superintendent Manny Valenzuela said. The district remains dedicated to increasing enrollment figures, and Valenzuela said that their secret sauce to do so is by focusing on people, programs, and properties. And looking at the public safety log from April 7th, staff from a Green Valley drug rehab facility asked sheriff's deputies to provide backup while a patient was transferred to a hospital. A man called the sheriff's department from Utah to report that when he was in the county a few days earlier, someone had stolen electronics, plumbing, and air conditioning from a Wrangler Ranch area home, and he suspected the burglars had gotten in through a back window. Deputies found the home in disarray. An employee of the Continental Shopping Plaza called the sheriff's department about a woman in a panic who said she needed to use a phone to call an Uber. Deputies gave her a ride home after clearing up some confusion. And a woman who hadn't spoken to her sister since the sisters met someone on Facebook 3 years ago asked deputies to check on her welfare. They did so, and they learned that the sister is living here in Tucson. And a couple called the sheriff's department to report someone is using their company's name and address on Indeed, posing as a shipping company and trying to hire employees. Deputies documented their complaint, and the couple's IT specialist is trying to get the post removed. And that is the reading of the Green Valley News for the 15th day of April. Mark DeGroft with you. Thanks for listening. I'll be back next Monday. Friday, Wallace will be here. Till then, take care.